It is said that the work of the best referees or umpires goes unnoticed. In basketball, at least, that is rarely the case. In his new book, The Whistleblower, subtitled Rooting for the Ref in the High-Stakes World of College Basketball, Bob Katz examines the career of former referee Ed Hightower and explores the plight of the men doomed to be abused by at least half of any crowd. Bob Katz, welcome to Only a Game.
Good to be here.
Perhaps the most oft-repeated phrase in your book is, Hightower, you suck. Did you ever ask Ed Hightower if he had trained himself not to hear all that howling?
I wished I had. I had some assumptions, and the conversation probably veered in that direction a few times. I know what he and almost all the other refs said, which is, you hear it, but you don't pay attention, and you certainly don't honor it as being a legitimate complaint that comes out of a studied assessment of the situation. Ed Hightower has two categories of distinction, is that he's what you would have to call an elite college basketball referee. By elite, I mean he has reffed the national championship game, the NCAA men's finals, four times. He's reffed the Final Four 12 times, had one streak, in fact, of reffing the Final Four seven consecutive years. In addition to that, he is the superintendent of schools of a small, semi-rural, largely white community in Illinois across the river from St. Louis.
One of the goals that you had while researching this book was to spend an entire college basketball game watching the ref without allowing yourself to be distracted by the players, the coaches, or the score. Did you ever manage to do that?
An entire game. Well, I would be lying to you if I said I made it from opening tip-off to final whistle. I did do a lot of it. My guess is if I was to go through a rigorous retraining program, I could get there eventually. It is hard for a fan to undo a lifetime of impulses and instincts. And the impulse and instinct is to watch the bouncing ball and watch the shot and watch nothing else. One of the perspectives I try to bring in this book is to acquaint fans and readers, hopefully, with the idea that there is a lot going on out there, the bouncing ball, the shot, the defense. But indeed, the role of the referee, the challenges the referee faces, have their own set of drama, their own moves and maneuvers, and their own crunch time experiences that I learned to appreciate, and I believe fans can do so also.
Carl Hess, one of the officials, told you that calling the game is 25% of the official's job, while 50% of it is managing people, and the remaining 25% is luck. Did that sound about right to you?
Well, I'm sure he was being a little bit glib, and like anybody being interviewed, he might want to revise that statement now that it's been quoted and printed in book form. But all of sports involve a certain percentage of luck, whether it's 25% or 10% or 12.4%, I can't say. And the same would apply to refereeing, if only because refereeing and the challenges of refereeing are inextricably part of the sport experience. They don't get everything right, nor does LeBron James make every shot. It happens.
The rule book for college basketball is over 100 pages long. Have the officials really memorized it?
I doubt if how could they have memorized it? They have a working familiarity with it. The expansiveness of the rule book is a bone of contention with the referees. They are not the ones who make the rules. The objective, the aesthetic objective, is to have a game that flows. Calling penalties, blowing the whistle, which is to say the referee's responsibility out there, is an interruption to the flow of the game. And the refs are always in a point of tension between doing their job, which they're compelled to do by the behavior of the players and the coaches, and interrupting the flow of the game. It's an interesting and complex relationship to a sport that they love.
Late in the book, you reference one particular game officiated by Ed Hightower that you say you wish you had seen. Tell us about that game and why you would like to have been there.
It was a game in the early 1980s, actually. It was at South Bend, Indiana. It was DePaul, which at that time I believe was, if not the top, one of the top-ranked teams in the country, and Notre Dame, always a rivalry. And it was a snowy February afternoon game. Referees are required to arrive 2 hours before game time. Hightower did. His two colleagues did not due to a snowstorm. They were stranded in Illinois. It was an NBC afternoon telecast. It was decided not to delay the game because network TV makes those kind of decisions, and that's how it goes. So Hightower had a ref the start of the game, probably the first 6 minutes, by himself. As he explains it, and I talked to Digger Phelps, one of the coaches involved, who confirmed this, with only one ref who was shorthanded and therefore encumbered from doing all that three refs might do in monitoring all the deviousness that goes out there, the players were perfect gentlemen. The coaches stayed away from them. They didn't carp, or at least not with their usual vigor. It was a game being played by gentlemen. At about the six-minute mark, the two tardy refs, flown in by private plane, arrived, put on their uniforms, marched down to the floor, and from then on, the game deteriorated to the usual complaining by the players about every foul, complaining by the coaches about everything that didn't go their way. At the end of the game, Digger Phelps, one of the coaches, said to the media, "I wish the other two refs who showed up late had never arrived."
It argues that maybe there should be one official, and everybody would be more understanding and therefore more polite, doesn't it?
It's an interesting idea. Yeah. I mean, there is no question, without getting too philosophical here, that the presence of referees in some ways authorizes a certain kind of deviousness, that they are therefore compelled to officiate.
Bob Katz is the author of The Whistleblower, Rooting for the Ref in the High-Stakes World of College Basketball. Bob, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill.